Hello and welcome to today's webinar entitled Critical Attributes for a Next Generation Data Center Network. I am Jim Metzler of Ashton Metzler & Associates, and I'm joined today by Paul Unbehagen. Paul is the Chief Architect for the Avaya Networking Organization. Welcome, Paul.
Thanks, Jim.
Now, Paul, I'm going to set the stage for this podcast by giving the audience some of my thoughts on data center lands, and then I'm going to ask you some questions on this really very important topic. Now, Paul, as I see it, historically, the data center network was pretty much just an extension of the campus network. Certainly more intense, more business critical, but we typically use the same campus-class products in much the same way. Another key attribute of the traditional data center is that applications were designed primarily to support client-server applications. Now, what that means is that data center networks are designed to support communications whereby the client would interact with one or maybe a few hosts. Now, while it was common to have, say, an application server, front-end a database server, transactions were relatively simple and straightforward. This meant that the traffic predominantly flowed what we now refer to commonly as a north-south direction from client to server and back again. But Paul, as I also see it, the typical data center network is currently in the process of really fundamental evolution. And there are a number of factors driving this transformation, and that includes a bunch of things that I say, such as the transition to composite application architectures, the broad adoption of business operations intelligence applications with communications-enabled business processes and complex event processing, and, of course, the adoption of server virtualization and the corresponding utilization of live virtual machine migrations. Now, Paul, each one of these factors creates some unique challenges for the data center network, at least in my view, and that ranges from sensitivity to latency and loss, increased traffic levels, and the risk of extended saturation of the common I/O connections. Now, the net of this is what's required on a going forward basis is an agile, high-performance, latency-optimized network solution that delivers exceptionally high performance. Now, Paul, those are some of my thoughts. I'm really anxious to get your thoughts. You obviously work with a wide variety of enterprise IT organizations. What are they telling you about the primary factors that are driving them to redesign their data center LAN?
Thanks, Jim. I agree. The large amount of requests and requirements coming out of this new generation of networking that we see coming down from standards and being implemented right now is driven largely out of this concept in the data centers, and this applies as well even in metros and other environments, but data centers in particular, where virtual machines have become this really mobile environment where they can be moving around a data center and be moving while they're actually serving hosts at the same time, doesn't fit well with the traditional way of doing networking. Right? In a traditional sense, networking was actually a very static thing to do. So trying to attach something that's very dynamic to something that's very static doesn't often mesh very well. So a large driver of where we lead to redesigning data center LANs is about how to make the LAN more dynamic so that it can map easier to the new requirements of the data center. Now, in the data centers themselves, the traditional model of 4,000 VLANs and even the idea of what a VLAN is has to evolve. Right, so we'll always need these subnets to sit onto Ethernet LANs and to provide connectivity. Now, what that LAN looks like and how it operates and how it behaves, particularly its personality, if you will, is what's adapting and changing now. And it's for very good reasons. It means, and for a good example, I've talked to several people who were working on the server side, the actual applications working on servers. And oftentimes, it's rather humorous to talk to these people because they refer to the networking staff as their wardens, as if they were prisoners being held captive at a certain place on the network because the network topologies themselves are so static that the server teams who want to move their VMs around and condense and expand the locations of where the VMs exist inside the infrastructure are held back by the limitations of traditional VLAN design, right? And that traditional VLAN design of mapping, okay, the VLAN exists on these two switches and it terminates here at this router point on another switch, and that's your area of mobility because these VMs can only move on their existing subnet. They have to particular IP address while they move around. Now, that is one area in which we have to focus on, but the other area is that we need to provide more functionality than just a simple LAN. Right? For example, 4,000 VLANs isn't cutting it at all in many environments. Even if you haven't used your entire 4,000 VLAN space, the idea of how you use it is very limited. And there's many environments that have reused VLANs in different spaces because of the way the tradition did routing. And you need us really to actually expand the LAN segments across the data center, across many, many racks, and connect up two different LAN environments. And that's where we see this evolution going with new methods of doing data center LAN connectivity. Because LANs don't exist just for their own sake, right? They have a connectivity that they need for the servers and to provide IP awarenesses within their existing location, as well as be able to connect to the outside world where hosts are actually the clients of their applications are sitting.
Okay, Paul, that certainly fits a lot into my thinking. Now, you brought up the word dynamic, and there's no doubt that the data center is becoming dynamic. And a lot of people say, well, gee, if you're going to have a dynamic data center, you need network virtualization. Part of the challenge I have with that is people use that phrase in a wide variety of ways. Now, how do you define network virtualization, and how do you see that fitting into the broader picture of the data center?
I couldn't agree more with you on that one. Network virtualization is probably one of the most overused terms, which has led to becoming one of the most confusing terms for customers. And if you think about it from a holistic point of view, a virtual network is something that simply takes a physical topology and virtualizes it. So you could refer to a VLAN as a virtual network, and it is a virtual network in the most simplest form. But the reality is that that's not really what we need anymore. So when I think about a virtual network, I think about something that's capable of doing far more than what a simple VLAN does today, right? And a virtual network should be able to be not only virtual in the sense of layer 2, it should also be able to virtualize layer 3. You should be able to actually run multiple layer 3 networks on the same physical infrastructure as if they were completely different physical networks. So one physical infrastructure virtualize many virtual environments like you had bought completely different switches and routers to money. Now, that kind of network virtualization means you need better ways of understanding infrastructure, new protocol to understand how to manage that. And that's the way I like to expose the customers. One, we need greater scale. But the other part is that back to that word dynamic. We need far more dynamic nature in constructing these things. Sometimes you don't want a human being involved in every single new definition of attachment of where these virtual networks attach from. Right? It can be done by a machine, it can be done by automated attachment, or by a human on CLI or through a GUI tool. But the point being is that the virtualization has to expand well beyond what we traditionally think with just IP and VLANs.
Okay, Paul, that certainly makes sense. But sticking with the confusion in the marketplace, there are a wide range of technologies that are being advocated as providing network virtualization. Some of those are shortest path bridging, SPB, Trill, VXLAN, NVGRE. Now, Paul, from your perspective, how do these approaches compare? Are they complementary, competitive? What are you seeing?
Oh, that's a long list of protocols. So let's first separate them into two different categories, right? So SVB and Trill are about making native Ethernet forwarding decisions in a way to replace something like spanning tree or MSTP or RSTP kind of environments. VXLAN and NVGRE are what we consider an overlay network in which you take a simple Ethernet LAN and you try and encapsulate it to run it over an IP network, right? So you have a more native type of switching, although let's get in context there because Trill isn't necessarily a native Ethernet switching. And then you have this overlay model, which both NVGRE and VXLAN do. So inside each of those categories, those two protocols each are competitive. Outside of those categories, they can be actually complementary. And I'll give you an example of how they're competitive. So VXLAN and NVGRE are two different ways in which server vendors and software vendors like VMware and HP and a few others out there have come together working on a way to be able to take a rich machine off one hypervisor, put it into the Ethernet header off of it, into an IP header, and port across an IP core. Oftentimes, that means that you've got to deploy a whole lot of routing inside of your data center or your environment in order to make this work. Clearly, on the other side of that, you have more of a native-like approach. And in SBB, we took the example of leveraging what was already there, because so much hardware has been optimized for the last 30 to 40 years in which Ethernet's existed. And Bob Metcalf's original diagram for Ethernet was dated 1972. It says a lot that today that IP and Ethernet are the two prevailing protocols that really matter today. So by leveraging Ethernet, it is actually taking better control of Ethernet. In fact, if you're using SBB, you're not using any of the traditional techniques in which you might have learned of Ethernet in the past, of flooding and reverse learning and broadcast terms. None of that exists in an SBB environment. This is complete control of everything that might happen and can happen inside the infrastructure, and there is no more broadcast kind of concept inside the SBB core, although it mimics it for end devices. And it does this for several purposes. One of obvious, like I said, is control. The other one is for speed of convergence. Now we're down to millisecond timing of network outages being dealt with. So the other part is the flexibility to attach new devices anywhere in infrastructure at any given time. And then another reason is scale. We've gone to now moving from 4,000 VLANs to 16 million LANs and E-lines and E-trees that could be created, as well as have IP awareness within the infrastructure that you can move VMs around the data center and without affecting the IP layer in the default gateways. Turo, on the other hand, actually doesn't do native Ethernet switching. This is something that is oftentimes misunderstood. Turo actually invented a new header encapsulation to slide between a customer's or tenant's or whatever the end device, the VM's Ethernet header, and the actual link layer Ethernet header. So typically what happens is when you're coming into a Turo switch, which is called an R-bridge, and it's called an R-bridge because what it means is it's a routing bridge. And the VM's frame comes into the switch, it gets encapsulated in this Turo header, which operates very much like an IP header. And then a new Ethernet header is put on outside of that Turo header. And this new Ethernet header is simply to get it across the Ethernet link to the next R-bridge, at which point that next R-bridge rips off that Ethernet header and does a route lookup on the Turo header to see, okay, what's the next hop? The same way an IP router would do if it was routing hop by hop. Where in an SBB environment, you would bring in the Ethernet header into the first switch from the virtual machine, and a single Ethernet header is put on, nothing else, and then, of course, the LAN ID. If it's in the case of SBBM, we can do ISIDs, which is 16 million virtual LANs we can bring in. And then that simple little MAC header that we put on top is the same MAC header that switches have been forwarding for the last 30 or 40 years, in which case every switch in the middle of the network that's participating in SBB cut through switches all the way through the network. It's all predetermined and predefined based on that, and that new header is under complete control of the SBB environment. Now, there's some intrinsic value out of this that's often missed. There's a security aspect that's involved that every service it's kept completely isolated from each other. But at the same time, there's another level of security that's involved in here, is that the network looks like a single hop. There is no way for anybody to ever hack into a virtual machine and try and hack into the infrastructure of the data center. The infrastructure itself is completely invisible to all the virtual machines. The entire network looks like a single switch router to every virtual machine or every user that might be a client of it. So that's one of the values, right? Now, how they can work together and the two different approaches, the overlay, say, with the native. For example, many of these environments, where Trill is just reinventing spanning tree with ISIS, it's still just 4,000 VLANs and includes root bridges again, SBB has none of that. From the IEEE perspective, we wiped the slate clean and started over with ISIS and no root bridges, and we wanted complete control. But this ISID guy I've mentioned a few times now is actually a 24-bit ID for the actual service. That is, Ethernet is a service that you're offering, and instead of having just a 12-bit VLAN, now you have 24 bits of space in which you can identify. Well, so does VXLAN, so does MVGRE. So there's lots of holistic ways in which we can attach these environments together because the overlapping VPN space, the bit boundaries, that is, map very nicely. And we can perceive ways in which that if someone wants to use SBB natively in the data center and use VXLAN to extend out of the data center to another data center, that's supported. We demonstrated back at VMworld just last September how using the multicast enhancements we've done into SBB, we can make VXLAN on top of SBB work beautifully and to scales that can't be supported on native TIM environments. because there was so much work done into enhancing the multicast algorithms of SPV. So there's lots of ways you can look at this thing, but I can understand why it's confusing the customers. Hopefully that clarified a little bit.
No, Paul, that was really good. You really helped me to understand both the key characteristics and some of the key advantages of SPV. Now, I know that Avaya has adopted it. Have other vendors other than Avaya adopted SPV?
Oh, absolutely. It is an IEEE standard, which is one thing that most vendors, you can't ignore an IEEE standard if you're doing Ethernet. It's a 1AQ, so multiple vendors are supporting. We've gone through 4 different interop events already where multiple vendors have shown up with more than even the vendors themselves had of implementations. That was 6 vendors, and I believe 7 or 8 implementations of SPV. I know of several more vendors that will be coming out with SPV over the next year, and we may actually be looking at a new 5th interop event even here in the year 2013.
Okay, Paul, one last question. What has Avaya done to enhance the value of SPV, and how are your customers responding to this approach to data center networking?
So at Avaya, we've taken an interesting approach to SPV in which that we like to give more awareness to all the possibilities that you can do within a data center or even within a campus. Now, within a data center, what's really critical, let me step back for a second before I go into a data center. What's really critical is not so much the protocol, but how you use the protocol to solve a real problem for the end customer. And in the data center, it's a very interesting environment that's not like a campus anymore, just like you pointed out in the beginning. And because it's not like that, we've implemented SPV in very interesting ways on our top-of-rack products. We have more of a mesh approach to actually mirror the way that data center flows actually operate. With all these web applications that you pointed out where 80% of the traffic is going east and west, it doesn't make sense so much anymore to actually be going from a top of rack up to aggregation switch back down to the top of rack for all these flows. You're taking a lot of hops there that may not make a lot of sense. Well, when we look at SPV, we realize that what it gives you is this phenomenal mesh of connectivity and a complete awareness of the full topology when you're running SPV, not only in the top of racks and end of rows and middle of rows and also core and aggregation switches. You know the lowest latent path between every endpoint and every other endpoint. So by connecting SPV so that we run SPV on the top of racks and the aggregation and the core, we also connect the top of racks directly to each other underneath these aggregation cores. So by connecting all the top of racks directly to each other, we end up in a far more connected environment so that proper decisions for the proper flows can be made at every ingress port. So you don't have to waste bandwidth or traffic by sending traffic in a direction it doesn't really need to go. Now, additionally, beyond that, it's also the fact that Avaya has added a lot of awareness into the IP realm of SPV because Ethernet doesn't exist on its own, right? Ethernet exists to support IP, and IP relies on Ethernet for transport, right? These two have a very nice symbiotic relationship, and leveraging that symbiotic relationship, we've been able to actually integrate and simplify a lot of the environments that would traditionally have many different protocols running and competing for CPU and memory. In our environments, we have a single protocol that's able to provide all of the IP routing as well as all the Ethernet so that optimal decisions, whether or not you route or switch, can be made properly within the infrastructure, as well as even the network virtualization for us isn't limited to Layer 2. We actually support network virtualization with SPV at Layer 3 and Layer 2 and both at the same time. So it's all integrated into a nice, simple, easy-to-run protocol that's far more easy to run and understand and troubleshoot inside of an environment. Not to mention, it's really a nice way to think about a network from a three-dimensional point of view. Instead of assigning protocols to links, you think about the network more in a three-dimensional that you have IP floating over Ethernet. Because Ethernet's on every single port and interconnecting every single switch, IP can be assigned for the routing functions at any given switch. And Ethernet connectivity for LAN can be assigned to any access port that's needed. So the virtual machines are free to roam across the data center infrastructure without affecting the stability of the IP subnet attachments for the default gateways.
Hey, Paul, I'd really like to thank you for all the insight you've provided. And I also want to thank our audience for attending this webinar on what I consider to be a very critical topic for networking professionals. But, Paul, before I let you go, I actually do have one more final question. Do you have any suggestion for today's attendees who want to learn more about Avaya's approach to data center networking design?
Absolutely. On the Avaya.com website, we have several white papers that discuss how to use SVB in many different environments, a lot of documentation on how to use it in the data center, as well as other environments that you might want to use it in. If you happen to be at Interop this year in Las Vegas, please stop by and talk to us. We're actually going to have a running demonstration of exactly what I referred to there within the data center with top of racks and how, and show you all the virtualization and how we can do all this on the same box and the same port, you know, all at the same time.
Paul, thanks again, and I really do look forward to our next conversation on networking. Thank you again, Paul.
Thank you.